This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Well, there are many scenarios. In the extremes, it can be everything from the massive crackdown, not unlike what we saw in Egypt in 2013, all the way over to another revolution, and sort of everything in between.
That's William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, on how the Algerian elections could play out. Details coming up. Also, five candidates, including two former prime ministers, will be competing for the presidency in Algeria. And representatives of Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan are meeting in Washington, D.C. today to work out their contentious differences on the massive dam that's under construction on the Blue Nile. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Zimbabwe police today blocked a sanctioned march against the government by civil servants who say skyrocketing inflation has incapacitated them financially. The march was meant to pressure the government to review their salaries. Reporter Kudzai Zanawash has details.
Robson Cherry is a teacher and secretary general of the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe. He explains why he came to join his peers today.
We are here marching and demanding a living wage. We are saying to the government we are incapacitated. And we have come here in our numbers to show that we are really much incapacitated. So we are here demanding the government to pay us a living wage, which is supposed to cater for our needs. So far we can't even afford the basic needs.
The turnout for the march has been poor amid an overwhelming police presence. Despite approving the march, police barricaded the streets, making sure the marchers were limited and could not reach government offices to present a petition. David Tsatsunga is the Apex Council spokesperson. He explains the true extent of civil servants' incapacitation.
We are saying to government, salaries of civil servants should be benchmarked against the Interbank rate. In other words, we should take the $475 that we were earning last year and then multiply that by the Interbank rate.
Tsatsunga says when they were earning in US dollars, the lowest paid civil servant would take home $475. Now that same worker takes home the equivalent of $30. He says the situation has become desperate, with many basic needs out of reach. He adds the dialogue with government has not been fruitful. Minister of Information Monica Mutswangwa briefed the media after the latest meeting with civil servants yesterday.
In the latest meeting that took place this afternoon, it has been agreed as follows. Government does not dispute the need to give a cost of living adjustment to its workers, but was faced with various competing national demands.
Mutswangwa says buying grain to help in ongoing drought, an agricultural input support scheme, bonuses for civil servants, and purchases of buses to provide subsidized public transport are some of the pressing issues that the government is trying to handle. Union leaders say they are going to be taking a different course of action to pressure government to act. Public doctors have been staying away from work, saying they too are incapacitated. This has resulted in 77 of them being relieved of their duties by government. The march leaders say they also will be making a report with the International Labour Organization on how they were blocked despite permission to march. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zanawashe from Harare.
An audit financed by the World Bank of seven Gambian state-owned companies shows governance problems have persisted under the governments of former leader Yahya Jammeh and his successor Adama Barrow. The audit report found they overstated the worth of their assets and lacked proper invoices and financial records, among other things, reporter Panderambai reports from Raleigh, North Carolina.
The audit by the British audit firm Ernst & Young examines the books of the seven companies with the hope of building systems that would allow the state enterprises to be successful. However, the audit exposed significant financial impropriety. Among the problems, millions of dollars could not be accounted for, and the books in some cases couldn't be reconciled. Frederick Tendeng is a Gambian political analyst. He says the ouster of repressive leader Yahya Jammeh in 2017 had given Gambians and the international community hope there would be greater transparency and better governance. However, he says the report shows Jammeh's successor, President Adama Barrow, has allowed some of the same practices.
Gambia was the apple in the eyes of the world. Everybody liked the Gambia. Donors volunteered to help the Gambia to move forward. What are we seeing? That this government is not taking it seriously, that it's mismanaging the funds, that you have a group of cronies that share our resources.
Among the problems the auditors found in 2018, the Office of the President ordered the Gambia Post Authority to pay $100,000 for carpets to be installed at the Grand 10 at the State House. And the Gambia telecommunication company, Gamtel, was instructed to transfer $2.5 million in funds to the central bank. Auditors discovered that none of the state-owned enterprises could present a sufficiently complete audit trail to support the key numbers in their financial statements for 2017. Tendeng says the alleged corruption in Barrow's government has cost the country the international goodwill after voters ousted Jammeh.
It's shameful to read in that report that you have at the port some buildings that were said to be built for about over $1 billion. And when you go, you see no building, they tell you that the building has been scrapped. So this is a scheme of corruption that is common from within all parastatals during Jammeh time, and that is continuing, and it's a disappointment to all Gambians.
Tendeng calls for the media and the public to hold the government accountable. Nyang Jai is a Gambian economist who thinks that privatizing state enterprises would help reduce losses.
Gambia needs to go through a public enterprise reform, meaning the state-owned enterprises need to either be sold off, and once they're sold off, they will behave fully like a private company. If not, they need to have strict performance contracts to make sure that these companies run profitably like any other private company would have.
He also argues the public is partly responsible for official graft.
Corruption is a two-way thing. It's just not the public officials. It's the citizenry that induce public officials. People looking for passports and want to get it within hours instead of 3-4 days. People trying to get a driver's license and other government documents. So we need to educate the public.
The auditor said former directors of some state-owned enterprises still have access to the company bank accounts. They also said two of the Gambia National Petroleum Company, GNPC, accounts are in the control of the president's office, and there have been significant cash outflows dating back to 2013. Information Minister Ibrahim Asila declined to comment on the report for now, saying he wasn't in office when the audit was done and he hasn't read it. He asked to delay a reply until the return of the finance minister, Mamoudou Ndiaye, who has traveled to the United States. Ndiaye has since returned home. VOA has made numerous attempts to get a reaction from Information Minister Silla, but to no avail. For VOA Africa, this is Pandering by reporting from Raleigh, North Carolina.
Algerian Army Chief General Said Saleh, who has led the push for presidential polls by the end of the year, says the election has the public's full support despite the slogan "No Vote" resonating during weekly protests. The five candidates include two former prime ministers and old political faces, even as protesters say Bouteflika-era figures still in power must not seek to use the December 12th election to appoint his successor. William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, spoke to VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi about what the conflict could lead to and whether the army chief can impose his will on the protesters.
Yes and no. He can force an election to take place if he can get enough Algerian judges and public officials, town hall personnel to monitor the election. And among the five candidates, there's enough popularity to guarantee a minimal vote. So the elections could be pulled off, but the results would be not much different from the 99 or 2014 elections or any elections in between, in that they would be seen by most Algerians as simply a facade for a military regime in power seeking to maintain its power. Can they force the vast majority of Algerians to vote and to be in favor of the elections? No. And in that sense, we're at a classic political impasse because the army's trying to force a solution without negotiating with the protesters.
Five candidates will run in Algeria's presidential elections next month, including two former prime ministers from Bouteflika's era and some old political faces, amid mass protests saying Bouteflika's era figures still in power must not use the presidential pull to appoint his successor. What would that lead to?
Well, there are many scenarios, and in the extremes, it can be everything from the massive crackdown, not unlike what we saw in Egypt in 2013, all the way over to another revolution, and sort of everything in between. One of the scenarios that many of the experts think might happen would be something like we saw in 1999, when at the last minute, several presidential candidates dropped out, leaving perhaps one candidate to win the election. A scenario we were hearing about a lot in 2012 and 13 was that the army would bless two candidates and let the population decide democratically, which at the time seemed like at least a slight democratic opening. And in that sense, that scenario is sort of happening now, in that we have five candidates, all of which, at least in some respect, the army is fine as long as that person will work with the military in terms of preserving their position. But it's very unlikely that this is going to lead to any kind of solution in terms of the political impasse. So the protest would continue to grow before, during, and after the elections, and likely force future negotiations on the nature of the political system, which is what the protest is all about.
Algerian judges are continuing their strike demanding an independent judiciary. What could happen if Algerian judges decided not to oversee the scheduled presidential elections next month?
Well, that depends on how many of them. The recent action in Wahran saw the security forces intervening in order to install non-striking judges or replace the judges that are striking. Going forward, knowing the Algerian state and the resources it commands, including a lot of gas and hydrocarbon wealth, they probably could find a way to staff the polling stations with enough non-striking personnel and judges to hold the elections. But it's certainly very important whether or not the majority of judges are supporting the election or not supporting the election. It's also worth mentioning that the FLN, the long-standing party in power in Algeria, is not putting a candidate forward. Most of the Islamist parties are not putting candidates forward. So most of the establishment and long-standing political parties are not participating in these elections, and that bodes badly for a political solution.
That was William Lawrence, professor of political science at George Washington University, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed Al-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiyis Wuhib in Washington. 19 past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. An audit financed by the World Bank of seven Gambian state-owned companies shows governance problems have persisted under the governments of former leader Yahya Jammeh and his successor Adama Barrow. Five candidates, including two former prime ministers, will be competing for the presidency in Algeria. And Zimbabwe police today blocked a march against the government of civil servants who say skyrocketing inflation has incapacitated them financially And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Representatives of Egypt, Ethiopia, and Sudan are meeting in Washington today to work out their contentious differences on the massive dam that's under construction on the Blue Nile. The $4 billion Grand Ethiopian Renaissance Dam was announced in early 2011. It's the centerpiece of Ethiopia's plan to become Africa's biggest power exporter, with a projected capacity of more than 6,000 megawatts. The issue is how quickly to fill the reservoir behind the dam. Egypt already is low on water and relies on the Nile for about 90% of its fresh water. Ethiopia's current plan is to start filling the reservoir next year, a process that is expected to take 2 years. President Donald Trump offered to arrange mediation talks after several rounds of negotiations have broken down. The Treasury Department is hosting the talks. Public meetings and celebrations took place across Cameroon today to mark the 37th anniversary of President Paul Biya's time in power and the one-year anniversary of his last inauguration. The opposition tried to organize protests against Biya, whom they say has plunged Cameroon into economic and social chaos, but the government banned the demonstrations. Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Yaoundé.
Supporters of Paul Biya and his CPDM party gathered in towns and villages across Cameroon Wednesday and chanted this song, which says the president is strong enough to continue to lead Cameroon. The CPDM organized the rallies to show the people's commitment to Biya, who at 86 is Africa's oldest ruler. Jonathan Fru, CPDM party president for the northwestern town of Santa, says Biya has done much for Cameroon.
The number of schools have multiplied, which give an opportunity for every child to go to school. We have access to medical facilities all around us. We have seen the evolution from one party to multi-party. We think that there's every reason that we have to celebrate.
But people on the streets of the capital, Yaoundé, openly discuss whether Biya is still able to lead the country. 30-year-old teacher Ngwa Collins says he has known only one president whom he thinks is growing weaker.
This year he had to travel to China and Russia, but he did not go. He instead traveled to Geneva for his health care, meaning that he is tired and his health cannot permit him to continue. He has to leave the scene in an honorable manner.
Biya was sworn in for the first time as president of Cameroon in 1982, following the resignation of the Central African State's first president, Ahmadou Ahidjo. Biya has been declared the victor of every presidential election since. In the most recent poll in October 2018, official results showed Biya winning with 71% of the vote. Maurice Kamto of the CRM party, who finished a distant second with 14%, accused Biya of stealing victory, but the court denied the challenge. The CRM sought permission to hold protest this week against what the party considers election fraud, a poor economy, and Biya's overstay in power. But the request was rejected by the government. Rights groups, including Human Rights Watch, have often accused Cameroon's government of oppressing dissent. The activists also accused the military of using excessive force as it battles armed separatist groups in the English-speaking northwest and southwest regions and Boko Haram fighters in the far north. Elvis Ngolengole is director of the CPDM Academy, where people are taught the virtues of the ruling party. He says the accusations are meant to destabilize the Biya government. He says the party recognizes that there are problems in Cameroon.
The 37th anniversary does not ignore the fact that people are feeling bad in the Northwest and Southwest, who have lost thousands of our brothers and sisters, that Boko Haram is killing innocent men and women and children. Our party is compassionate enough for this. In the face of adversity, as a human society, we shouldn't lose sight of hope.
Biya has been in power for more than 40 years in Cameroon, 7 of them as prime minister, 37 as president. In 2008, he removed term limits from the constitution, allowing him to serve indefinitely. He is now the second longest serving president in Africa after his neighbor Teodoro Obiang Nguema of Equatorial Guinea. When his new term is finished, he will be 93 years old. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé.
The UN Children's Fund reports more than 855,000 children in Cameroon's northwest and southwest Anglophone regions are out of school, putting their future and the stability of the country at risk. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
What began as a political crisis between Cameroon's Anglophone and Francophone communities 3 years ago has deteriorated into a full-blown humanitarian emergency, and children are the major losers in this political linguistic conflict. Separatists in northwest and southwest Cameroon have put a ban on education in the region to protest government discrimination against English speakers. In the past 3 years, the UN Children's Fund reports at least 70 schools have been destroyed and pupils and teachers have been kidnapped. UNICEF spokeswoman Marixi Mercado says the separatists' ongoing no school policy is having a devastating impact on the children and their communities.
2 months since the beginning of the new school year, around 90% of public primary schools, that's more than 4,100 schools, and 77% of public secondary schools, and that's 745, remain closed or non-operational. A very real fear of violence also keeps parents from sending their children to school and teachers and staff from reporting to work.
UNICEF says school keeps children safe, whereas children who live in violent, unstable environments run many dangers when they do not go to school. It says they face the risk of recruitment as child soldiers, of child marriage, early pregnancy, and other forms of exploitation and abuse. Mercado says UNICEF is trying to minimize the harm to children wherever possible.
In some areas where schools have been closed, community-run learning activities have been initiated so that children do not miss out further on their education. UNICEF is procuring school books and other learning material for 37,000 school-aged children, and we are training teachers, including on social cohesion and accelerated learning.
UNICEF is calling on all communities, armed groups, and government authorities to protect education in all its forms and not to use children as pawns in their political battles. The agency reports it has received less than half of the $20 million it needs this year to provide Cameroon's children with a safe and protective learning environment. It is appealing to international donors to support this effort. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Al Santos, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.